Blog Talk Radio.
This isn't the Matrix.
No. It's another training program designed to teach you one thing. If you are not one of us, you are one of them.
What are they?
Sentient programs. They can move in and out of any software still hardwired to their system. That means that anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone, and they are no one.
We have survived by hiding from them, by running from them. But they are the gatekeepers. They are guarding all the doors, they are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neo. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
I've seen an agent punch through a concrete wall. Men have emptied entire clips at them and hit nothing but air. Yet their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
All right, folks, this is the Afro Nerd. One of those days, again, our systems are down, and unfortunately I have no access to the board. Captain, I was hoping you might be able to throw in the intro, but unfortunately things are a bit screwy. Anyway, welcome to the Grindhouse edition of Afro Nerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk. This is the comic shop at 6 p.m., and again, our apologies, these things happen, you know, with the electronics and technology, some things just do not work. Anyway, gentlemen, just as come on in. I can't, I don't have access to the intro.
Shazam, it's Captain time. Now let's bring in the great Daryl.
Well, last time saying this, if you're a millionaire and you're going out to party, what's the sense of drinking and driving? Will my intelligent brothers making all the money in the athlete world realize this, finally? If you're going out drinking, get a driver. For the love of God, stop.
And not only that, quickly, even though, you know, this is not a sports segment, but the NFL has people that will pick you up. You have to wait a
yes.
half an hour, and we'll drive you back to your residence.
Yes. another life needlessly gone. It breaks my heart, but let's get this started.
Well, gentlemen, listen, not to go that deep into it, because I don't want to get into Afro Nerd mode per se, because
yes.
the captain knows how I can be.
Yes.
We'll really address this somewhat for the next segment. Again, folks, we have the comic shop at 6 p.m. and Afro Nerd Radio, a.k.a. Afro Nerd, featuring Captain Kirk at 7 p.m. But this is, listen, we have to separate ourselves. You would quantify or qualify that person as a dumb black. We have dumb blacks, unfortunately. That's the way it goes. Time and time again, you're going to see this over and over again with this is the way it is. He's 25 years old, no sense of intelligence. Money is wasted. Finance is wasted. Lives are wasted. It's going to continue unless we call it out for what it is. Some people just aren't that intelligent, unfortunately. This is the way it is. This is why this is called the Afro Nerd Show. It is what it is, gentlemen. All right, I'm going into Afro Nerd moment. We'll address my other psyche at 7 p.m. All right, listen, we have a lot to get into. We're just going to go around the horn on this one, gentlemen, because I do not have access to the boards. Of course, the captain does. There was a mentioning of Arrow. I think actually the captain brought this up. Well, you really weren't that keen on this past episode of Arrow. Again, folks, Arrow was a CW program greenlit for an entire first season. I think they let a couple of shows go. It did gangbusters in ratings. So they greenlit it for a entire season. So it's doing very well. Arrow, of course, is based on Oliver Queen, the Green Arrow comic book. I love the show, but and I think Daryl even liked it because you emailed me on this thing. But I think the captain wasn't so keen on this particular episode with the second appearance of Helena Bertinelli, the Huntress. Captain, go into that. What was your deal with this past episode?
Right, it's not just this episode. It's the last two episodes. All right, let me get started. The series is on point, all right? I mean, now, we've had other series like Smallville, which I never liked. You know, I could never get into Smallville because I just thought Smallville was just small. You know, and a lot of times the writing was lazy. But I thought this right here, the way it started off, the first couple of episodes that I saw, was tremendous. They don't have a huge budget, and this is made for TV. I thought they were doing a very good job. Now, and the way they also portray each character. There's a lot of balance going on in the show. There's not a lot of minstrels and everything else. Everybody is balanced correct in the way that you would like to see, you know? Now, so that's all fine and dandy. The problem I have now, every minute he's taking off his mask here. You understand? So it's like, you know who he is. This one knows who he is. This one knows who he is. What's the sense of wearing the mask? That's the problem I have. And I know why they did it. You understand? I know why they did it. Because they got in between the middle. They got a little lazy with the writing. All right, you bring in the Huntress. That's fine and everything else. You bring her in. Here's the problem. You bring her in. Now, unless you're a comic aficionado, you're not necessarily going to know who the Huntress is. So then you see this woman who can fight like crazy. There's no training, you know, backlog to see where she picked up her fighting skills or anything else. It's just an angry, you know, young lady with her father, and then she's kicking ASS. That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. You have to give the people something. At least with Arrow, you get it. He was on an island. He was trained. Also, you have everything happening in DC Comics to back it up. You can go Google him if you don't know what's going on. When the character came on, the Huntress, you don't know who that person is. You have to be a comic book aficionado. Otherwise, you're not going to know this person. The casual viewer, what is this going on? They're lost. That's a big mistake, far as I'm concerned, far as the writing is concerned. And then his mask is off everywhere. Come on now. That's the problem I had. So I'm hoping, because I like the series, that it picks up in the next episodes. Because eventually, you know, they're going to bring her back based on what we see and everything. She's still out there, and she knows his identity. You know, I just had a problem with that. You know, that's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give you my opinion on it in a moment, but I'd want to hear from, and I'm sure our audience would like to hear from Daryl. Daryl, what's your opinion of the series thus far, and specifically the points that the captain is bringing up?
Okay, I agree with the captain on the mask thing and the hood thing and the reveal there, all right? Because I get sick of it in comic book movies where you have this hero. Heroes have gone 40, 50 years without having their secret identity known, and then the first dollar of a superhero movie, all of a sudden his identity is revealed. You know, that drives me nuts. I could see that in Arrow. I'm right there with him. My thing about this and why these episodes work for me is not the Huntress per se, but it's how Diggle came across. Catch me on this, right?
Well, explain who Diggle is to the audience, because you're going into it. Explain who he is.
Okay, Diggle is the black bodyguard turned helper for Arrow, for Oliver Queen, all right? He's a new character introduced for the show, but he's essentially playing the role of Speedy / Arsenal, where he's Arrow's second. He's the guy that to bounce everything off of, right? And the whole time Arrow is making the missteps with Huntress, there's Diggle going, dude, I thought we were past this. Don't you understand what's going on here? She's everything you would have been if I didn't check you. If I didn't stop you, you know, she is that cliff you would have jumped off of. And hanging out with her is just a bad influence on you. I know, oh, you both got the same sense of loss. You both want revenge. You both want justice. But understand, you've decided not to kill, which, again, I find funny because using bows and arrows not to kill, that's kind of hard to do. It's skill, but it's kind of hard not to do. All right? But he's there as a check. So essentially, you have in Huntress and Diggle in this show, you have the two sides of the path Arrow has chosen to go down, represented on each side. That's where the episode totally works for me, because essentially Arrow is seeing in Huntress, this is what you could have become. If you decided I'm going to do this totally by myself, I'm going to keep all the rage bottled inside, and I'm going to just go after it, single-minded, you know, becoming essentially a lunatic. And I have to disagree with Captain on this point, too. A lot of people know who Huntress is by the Justice League cartoons, the Justice League Unlimited. You got a fair sense of who Huntress was. She was one of the most popular characters in the last 2 years of Unlimited. You know, her in question made a great couple on that thing, and the rivalry she had with Black Canary, people dig that. So a lot more people would know who Huntress is than we'd expect. But it worked for me just as a prism type thing. But I do get what Cap is saying about the mask and the Huntress training and all of that. That does have to be explained if she's going to be that on par with him. And we're going to get into another problem with that coming up when they introduce this Dark Archer, who is supposed to be his main competitor, main rival coming up in future shows, because they're going to have to really lay the groundwork and set this up really well. Because you just introduce a character like that cold, it'll lead to reactions like the Captain had with Huntress right here. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right, a couple of things.
Now, hold on. One thing I got to say.
Sure.
All right? One thing I got to say quickly. Daryl, normally I would let it slide, but I'm not going to let it slide. You're so insider, you don't even realize how insider you are. Now, let me say what you said. You said everybody would know who the Huntress is, and then you mentioned Black Canary. The first-time person watching this show is not going to know. They're not going to know.
Okay.
Listen to initially what you just said. You're watching something else. That means you're initiated. You understand? And then
that's
you start watching this show. Then you know. For the person who's not initiated, you understand? It's a TV series. It's a TV series. You could just be flipping through the channel and say, oh, this dude is jumping here. Let me see what this is. You always have to introduce to a certain extent. That's what I wanted to say.
All right, but
hold on. Let me jump in here for a minute, gentlemen. Well, a couple of things. I have to agree with the Captain on this a bit, Daryl, because first of all, if you even do the research on Green Arrow as a character, Green Arrow was a third level tertiary character for about 25 to 30 years. He was pretty much a lesser known character. He was always somewhat of a poor man's Batman, and that's really reason why the Huntress is kind of a layover from the Batman mythos, and you know that. So, I mean, let me give a little bit of background to the audience as to who Green Arrow is. Green Arrow came out in 1941. Batman came out in 1939. So he comes in after the main two, Batman and Superman. And I think Wonder Woman actually comes in before Green Arrow. But before, when you have Batman, Superman, they're the number two, and then all these other analogous heroes come in afterwards. A lot of what you're talking about really would be an insider's thing. Sure, people who are into comic books know the Huntress. But even then, the Huntress, there's been several different Huntress characters. So you can almost, even if you're an aficionado, you can't keep track of who the Huntress is. Even I only know maybe one or two versions of the Huntress. There's about five or six Huntresses out there. So, but I do think that the series is going to let us know more about her mythology. there's a hint of a past with her. So I think she's going to be a recurring character. They'll probably unveil more about her. But matter of fact, Trichnology, he says JS and JSU touched lots of non-comic heads. Then he says JSU leveled out all the tiers. Yeah, maybe that may be true. But someone just walking into Arrow, we spoke about this in the gym. One of our friends didn't even know Arrow was Green Arrow. I said, yeah, Arrow is Green Arrow. He knew who Green Arrow was, but he didn't even make the connection between Arrow and Green Arrow. So when we speak about this stuff, we have to understand this is a different audience. This is not the comic book audience. These are people who are TV people.
Okay, and I'll say it like this. Ironically, this is the third attempt at them portraying a Huntress character on the CW. That's totally ironic, totally sideways of the point. But what I was saying, all right, and it was not being insider. I was just saying that Huntress is a little bit more mainstream known than we think. That's all I was saying. Trichnology's right.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of non... Well, hold on. I let you guys rip me. Now I'm going to come back at you. All right? There were a lot of non... There was a lot of non-comic book heads who got into Justice League and Justice League Unlimited because their kids started watching. They sat down. They were watching the series. So I'm just saying that Huntress was known. Now, if you are just coming in to an Arrow episode, and you're trying to figure it out, well, it sucks to be you. I'm going to be just that blunt. Because they have built for you to catch what is happening right now in Arrow. If you were coming in, first things first, that was the second part of a two-part story. If you were just coming into that episode, wow, you got to go back online and catch all the episodes then. Because they've already laid a mythology in this dang thing. So you can't, there's no little guide in the corner. Like, it isn't like VH1's pop-up video where, boop, this is this character, and this is what's happened before. Boop, there's this character, this is what's going to happen with it before. All I'm saying, all right, is for drama's sake, this episode worked as a prism showing you the path that Ollie is on, Oliver Queen. Oliver Queen is who I'm calling Ollie. That's Green Arrow. The path he is on now, which is Diggle, which is Justice, Truth, and Right, or Huntress, Miss Helena Bertinelli, the mob boss's daughter, all right, where hers was pure anger and vengeance. It works as showing you the two sides that Ollie could, the two paths Ollie was on, the one he is on now, Diggle, the one he could have been on, hers. And it's just, it lets the viewer decide. You got both sides of the damn issue, and you're seeing it, and you're looking at it like, which path would I have taken in this situation?
Hold on, quick thing, because we do have time constraints here, Darryl. Captain, again, my board, I cannot get to it. Let's go to a musical break. Pick something from the Nerdcore. Just put in Nerdcore or Comic Shop, and you should come up with a whole bevy of songs. Let's go to a quick musical break. Maybe.
What about Adam Warrock? I got some Adam Warrock stuff up here.
Yeah,
right?
go to Adam Warrock. We'll get back.
Let's hit this.
We'll get back. Sorry, folks, for the mishap with the technology, but, you know, it is what it is. We'll
Live
come back
radio.
To this, Darryl. We'll come back to it. Let's go to a groove.
Right. Adam Warlock, Maleficent.
And here we go again. Another round, another bout, another knockdown curl. You're so magnificent. You with pale skin, you with horns too. I never wanna mess with the woman scorned too. I like an edge to my women, like I'm supposed to swim in shark infested waters. That's where you push me in. Cause what's love? Another problem solved. Cause it keeps me honest with all of the danger involved. Yeah, this one goes out to all the vengeful, crazy, villainous, Cruella's of filled bitches. I mean, misses. Oh, wait, please don't grab your scepter. Listen, sometimes I put my foot in my
halo hovering over my head. I made mistakes, it's likely you probably made them too. So I'm with you, yo, let's burn the city down. Let's curse our enemies' blood and let the river drown. All of the places that never wanted us around. We can do our own thing, so keep that smile upside down. Yo, hold on the list.
That was Adam Warrock, Magnificent. Is that the correct?
Maleficent. Maleficent.
Oh, man. 100%, man. Again, folks, welcome to the Comic Shop, as presented by Afternoon Radio. We're almost at the midway point. Daryl B., Captain Kirk, and myself, D-Bird, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd, we're talking about, at least we're going to wrap it up anyway, the Arrow series, and specifically the Huntress arc. And I was telling Daryl, I mean, we're just going to agree to disagree on this thing. But my feeling is Daryl, part of me understands where you're coming from, being in the comic book world. But I'm learning to adjust because I'm encountering more and more people who want to partake in what we've been dealing with for decades now. We live this lifestyle, and I'm going to term it that way. But there's folks that are actually liking what we've been digging for years. And we have to adjust to that. In the gym, we talk about from our inner sanctum. Gerard is a cat that works that we know of, and as well as Sally V, shouting those people out. And they say that, you know, they're coming into this world with a great deal of intellectual curiosity, Daryl. And they don't know. I had to go into a little bit of, because I'm dealing with this personally, with people who do not know, and I don't want to take the attitude of sucks to be you with them. Oh, that was a good line.
I don't want to
take that attitude because these people, everyone does not come in with full knowledge. I mean, you know, I had to explain to him that Arrow and Green Arrow are one and the same. And as I'm telling our audience, I have to educate people. They think that this character has always been this way. This character was a tertiary character from the 1940s all the way to the early 60s. And now, because of, you know, giving some knowledge to the audience, and you know this, of course, Daryl, Denny O'Neill, famed comic book writer, in the 60s, he turned the Green Arrow character around. He was a millionaire back then. Now, you know, there's been adjustments. There's no more millionaires in the comic book universe. Everyone's a billionaire. So he was a millionaire who eventually lost his money, ended up being a left-wing, progressive, urban hero. The classic Denny O'Neill comic book stories with him paired with Green Lantern, they are classic socially conscious stories. That history leads us into Arrow as he is now. But it's still, that Arrow only works with a little bit of the Batman mixed in with it. Helena Bertinelli is a Batman colleague. Now she's made into a Green Arrow colleague for the sake of television. But the TV audience is distinctly different than even the animated audience. The animated people are the ones going to the hardcore comic book geeks are going to be looking at the animated stuff, not 8 p.m. Television. We have to adjust to these people, Daryl. I mean, I'm talking to them.
Okay, well, and I'm saying that some of the people you're trying to say. Won't see that. Have seen that because they watch it with their kids. They watch
yeah,
it with
but,
the
but,
and
listen, we're talking about
these
audiences, Daryl, these audiences, they want to get millions of people to look at this stuff, not a couple hundred thousand.
All right. So I'm shooting to the field, but are we forgetting my role here? I'm the evil guy here.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't looking at everybody else.
Clearly now.
Captain Kirk is the voice of reason. You're the goody two-shoes. I'm the evil dude
sometimes.
Here. All right? And all I'm saying is you're going way back into Green Arrow's history. He came from this far back.
Well, listen, sir. We're trying to inform the audience, man.
Okay, but you just did what you're accusing me of. Because in the show, he has not lost his fortune. In the show, he hasn't done all, you know. Right now, we're just dealing with the basics. Stuck on an island, lost his father, comes back, thing of revenge, hooks up with this chick who later will become the Huntress, okay? And his partner's trying to talk him down, says that she's no good for him. And in the end, the attitudes of both of them is too much to bear. They split. She gets away. May come back later. There it is. I just explained the both episodes in about 40 seconds. There you go. You wanted me to be curtained to the point? There you go.
All right, let's move along because you have more stuff to do. We'll get into this again at some point. I want to talk about, I guess, the upcoming, hopefully we'll see it in 2014, but 2014 they're talking about the X-Men sequel to X-Men First Class, and talk about a mythology that's all over the place for the movie audience. See, some of the stuff, we have to admit, this kind of dovetails off of what we just spoke about, that it's one thing to have full knowledge of comic book mythology, but it goes out the window when it's translated for the mainstream audience. Because now, yeah, the X-Men First Class, which is, I guess, related to the other X-Men mythologies, X-Men movies that Fox was behind. And now that sequel to First Class, we're going to go into X-Men Days of Future Past. Now, to the audience, X-Men Days of Future Past is based on an iconic comic book story arc appropriately entitled Days of Future Past, that essentially deals with the modern X-Men, as you know them, Storm, who was played by Halle Berry, Storm, Wolverine, who else? Cyclops.
Colossus.
All the main mainstream X-Men characters, but in the future. In the future. Some have died. Some mutants have died. Some are obviously who were younger are adults now or older, and they're surviving in a world that is squarely against mutants. And there's an iconic cover that's been replicated over and over again, that iconic Days of Future Past cover where you see Kitty Pryde, and who was Kitty Pryde's code?
Shadowcat.
Daryl.
Shadowcat.
Shadowcat. And Wolverine, who's an older Wolverine. And Wolverine really isn't supposed to age, but he has gray on his temples. He's an older man, and both of them are in front of a brick wall with wanted posters of all the mutants. And some of the mutants, it shows clearly some are alive, some are dead. It's a completely iconic story. So they're going to try to interpret this for the screen. Now, one of the chief complaints from the last X-Men series was that we did not see the Sentinels. The Sentinels, for the audience, are government-sanctioned, government-created robots that are programmed to destroy mutants. I don't know, they're probably 40 feet tall, and they hinted at this a little bit in a real cheap way. I think, was it the third X-Men, Daryl,
yep.
Or the second one?
Yeah, the
we
third,
saw the actual
danger room scene.
So, there's no way they're going to get around not seeing these humongous robots for Days of Future Past if they do it correctly. And there's talk about bringing back the old team the older, you know, the original actors from the trilogy to come back. Halle, Patrick Stewart, a guest appearance by Hugh Jackman. All these people are going to have to show up. So it might, if done well, it could be very interesting. It could be a blockbuster. But I don't like the fact that Bryan Singer is attached to this thing. I hate it. Bryan Singer, folks, well-known, successful director, but he's also responsible for the last Superman from 2006?
Yeah.
Superman Returns.
Superman Returns, that mess. And he's been hit or miss with X-Men, actually. X-Men could have been better. When you look back on it, it could have been better. So they brought him back for this thing. I mean, this is crazy.
Right. Well, the main problem people had online, all right, was that Ian McKellen would be back and Hugh Jackman would be back and Patrick Stewart. The only one I have a problem with is Patrick Stewart. Because if we remember X-Men 3, and we've loved to forget X-Men 3 with as many messed ups as it has, Patrick Stewart's body isn't there any longer. He jumped into the original Professor X's body isn't there any longer. He jumped into another body. So you're telling me that his force of will turned that body into a new Professor X body? They're gonna have to definitely explain to Patrick Stewart how Patrick Stewart's gonna show up in this thing. But outside of that, if you have the old team in the future with the use of CGI and cosmetics as older, and they're sending someone back, it could work. All right, that's typical knee jerk reaction. You see all the old actors gonna be on this. Oh. Why are they here? No, don't mess this up. I have to agree with the Afro Nerd on this. The Bryan Singer news upsets me more than bringing the old cast back. Because after all, it's time travel. You're essentially dealing with time travel as you're going to be dealing with the Sentinels because Days of Future Past, essentially the storyline was to prevent the bleak future. They sent Kitty Pryde back in time, or essentially sent her back in time to warn the X-Men of a situation that happens that turns the whole struggle against them and enables the Sentinels to take control of the world, essentially. So if you're going to have the older actors portray their previous roles, as the mutants getting tortured in the future and this is their last gas gambit, it should work. But like I said, just like Afflinger, I would have loved the director of First Class. With the problems I had with First Class, it was very close to hitting home. It was very close. I mean, everybody knows what my problems with it was. But I can't lie. It was shot well. It was well-intentioned. I felt about First Class the way I felt about X-Men. Okay, that was his first shot. Let's see what his second thing is. I don't want Singer back. I really don't. Back to you.
Well, a couple of things. I have to admit that, well, first of all, who did X-Men First Class? Was it
Matthew Vaughn?
Right. Matthew Vaughn did an excellent job on that film because it made me feel like I was reading X-Men number one for the first time. It had the costumes, the 1960s backdrop. It felt like X-Men number one. It just did. And that's a hard thing to do. The costumes were on point. There were some things that were, as Daryl said correctly, there were some problems with it, but for the most part, he hit that strong. Even with the younger Magneto and Germany and the Hitler backdrop and the Jewish you know, the Jewish theme and the anti-Semitism that was displayed during that period. It was dead on time. It was outside of a few minor situations. It was a great film. And I want to go into the chat room briefly because I want to go into what they're saying. Now, again, friends of the show, Tricknology, Stanley Kubrick from the UK, Q-Storm, everybody's in full effect. Kubrick says, X-Men 3 wasn't too bad. Compare it to the Wolverine movie. Anything was better than Wolverine Origins. Now, the thing about that is, as time has gone on, respectfully, no one wants to hear stuff about, well, this wasn't too bad anymore. The comic book audience, I'm going to go into Garrow mode now. There's a certain switch that I have to cut on to become like Garrow.
Well,
so I'm cutting on now. Now I'm going to go ham right now.
Okay.
No one is tolerating a whack comic book movie right now. And Bryan Singer is at the heart of when it stopped. Okay? No one wants to see. They're just not tolerating it. I'm fully confident that when Superman comes out under the tutelage of Zack Snyder, it's going to knock it out of the park.
Oh, man.
They're just not going to tolerate this anymore. There's too much information. Walk into a comic book store, there's too many geeks, there's too many consultants. You should not be. You can't make a bad movie. Green Lantern, all this stuff. No one is tolerating that stuff anymore. So the reality is that I don't know why Bryan Singer's on this project anymore. It smells like it's going to stink.
All right.
I hope it doesn't.
You know why?
Yeah.
Because of the numbers. They said the numbers were great. That's why they brought it back.
Well, you know what? But things have changed. Things have changed. You know what it is? Also, Captain. Is that when X-Men first came out, because, again, someone, I think it might have been Stanley Kubrick, he said that, you know, Singer did the first X-Men. Yeah, the first X-Men was okay before we knew there was anything any better.
Yeah,
but a decade has passed since the first X-Men. And people, the expectations are higher, and you can't come with some whack stuff now that the comic book industry is what it is. Now we're in full swing where we have a comic book movie factory now.
Good point. You had the Iron Man movies, you had the Thor movies, you had the Avengers.
Yeah.
Good point.
But our expectations,
can't argue.
You know, listen, when I first saw the X-Men, I was like, oh, this is great. Even X-Men 2 to me. Actually, X-Men 2 was superior to me than X-Men 1. But time has gone on now where people have perfected these movies. And the expectation, you can't come. You look at X-Men 1 now. It doesn't compare to the stuff that's been out so far. And Singer being attached to all that other stuff, no, I'm not feeling it.
All right, so reading between the lines here. Hey, Captain,
I'm cutting off my Daryl switch. Go ahead.
Okay, reading between the lines, Captain, you just heard what he said. He has total faith in Zack Snyder with Superman Man of Steel. If that thing is a flop or if it's crap, we both are just going to have to back up and give him space. Because he already proclaimed it's going to be a blockbuster. So if it's a crap or something like that, we both just grab popcorn, sit back, and enjoy the show because it'll be one of the most classic comic shops of all time.
I see that Q-Storm is in full effect, and he says that I can't ride with you on that. General Zod is tired. Yeah, General Zod is tired. I'm not going to lie about that. But I'm going to ignore it. I'm going to take it because I don't know why I have to rehash this man's origin again. But I'm going to trust Zack Snyder on this. Zack Snyder was able to pull a story out of The Watchmen. The Watchmen is a sophisticated, complex work. And for him to do it the way that he did, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. So we're just going to have to tolerate the reboot on the Superman thing. But there's even talk about him sneaking in. Because I don't see how he's going to get around it, sneaking in some stuff going towards the Justice League movie. If he does that, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay, like I said, he's going to need at least 15 minutes, Cap.
Here's the question. If you're bringing in General Zod, you have to bring in the Phantom Zone, correct?
Yeah, yep. I'm pretty sure it's going to be addressed.
Go,
yeah.
Go a little insider now for the Daryl. That's a little Daryl.
That's not going to be insider. That's not insider anymore. That,
okay.
The Phantom Zone was covered in Smallville and covered in all that early Christopher
okay.
Reeve crap.
All right. All
they
right.
know who that is, what that is.
Okay, all right. But like I said, if it flops, Captain, we sit back with popcorn because we're going to enjoy this. Because he's going to steal my shtick totally here, and I'll just hand him the Ginsu knives.
What, you talking about, you think Superman's not going to do well?
No, but what you just said is you expected it to be a blockbuster, and you said you had total faith in Zack Snyder.
Yeah,
okay?
I do.
All
right. I'm not looking at it from a perspective of, okay, he's got to make a lot of money. I'm looking at it as far as being a artistic. What is it going to bring to us thematically and artistically? Because some people, I'm pretty sure that some folks are disappointed with The Watchmen. I wasn't. The Watchmen thematically and artistically interpreted that book the best way anyone else can. I thought it couldn't get any better than that. Now, some folks are going to find problems with The Watchmen. I don't see how the hell they could. To do a movie, it was an R-rated comic book movie. That meant to me that this guy wasn't going to kowtow. If he made it into a G movie or a PG, then it would have been a cornball piece of work. That was an adult comic book, and he made it into an adult movie. He gets props for that because he could have made more. He could have made concessions.
Okay.
He could have made concessions. He didn't make any concessions. That was an homage or an ode to the comic book fan, that particular movie.
I get what you're
saying. People are still going to
yeah.
put some stink fly on The Watchmen. I don't know how. I don't know how. The only thing is they have the weird monster at the end. That's it. Everything else, you had what's the guy's name from the Bad News Bears, who's now an adult actor, who played
Jackie
Rorschach.
O'Haley. Oh,
come on. Yeah. That guy's incredible.
Yeah,
you must be mistaken. You're trapped in here with me.
Yeah, that was the best.
That's it. I was
right.
Once I heard that line, I was done. I said, okay,
yeah.
That's it.
Listen,
transition
I'm willing
time.
To bet anybody. I'm willing to bet anybody. $100. Make it easy. $100. That Superman movie is better than Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah. That's not a bet.
Wow,
that's not a bet, Captain.
Who's going to take you on that bet?
Holy
bear,
Captain.
Shout out the chat room right now. Who's going to take you on that bet?
Oh, dear God.
That's not even a bet. The 30-second trailer is better than Green Lantern. Come
there
on.
There you go.
All right, we got about 18 minutes remaining, 17 minutes remaining. Let's do another transition. Star Trek Into Darkness. Star Trek Into the Darkness. We had a teaser trailer that was released last week. We see Mr. Cumberbatch, a.k.a. Sherlock from the U.K., doing his thing. Interesting that we did not see any space shots. It was all terra firma. And from what I see, we may have another one on our hands. The only question that remains is, who will Cumberbatch play? Is he going to play Gary Mitchell, or is he going to be Khan? Now, for the listening audience, because I got to explain this stuff, for those who are fans of the original series, which ran from 66 to 69, people forget that the original series only ran for 3 years. Gary Mitchell was a story arc, was an episode where he was a colleague of Captain Kirk, a close friend of Captain Kirk, and he becomes omnipotent. He gains godlike powers in this episode. And to go through a lot of, without getting into a lot of explanation, being that he is the friend of Captain Kirk's, and he becomes godlike, Captain Kirk has to take him down. So essentially, he has to kill his best friend. And how do you kill a god? That was an infamous, legendary story arc in the original series mythology. And there's a hint that Mr. Cumberbatch will be playing this version of the Gary Mitchell character. But there's also talk that he might be Khan. But I don't feel comfortable with him being Khan because Khan is supposed to be, the great, late great Ricardo Montalban played Khan to a hilt in the original series and in the film series. I would want to see a man of Latin descent play Khan. Or, I guess, Asian descent, because it's Khan. But I don't know if I want to see Mr. Cumberbatch play a Brit. And folks listening know I'm an Anglophile. I don't know if I want to see him play Khan. But he seems like he would be an excellent Gary Mitchell. What are your thoughts on that, Daryl?
I think it accomplishes what a teaser trailer is supposed to accomplish. It piques your curiosity, and now you can't wait for the full trailer to come out. The one thing, and you just brought it up, that kind of disturbs me was it's Star Trek. You need space shots of some type, and there was none. You know, that leads me to believe that, oh, they're still redoing and tinkering with the space shots and stuff like that. But otherwise, it piqued my curiosity. That's what it's supposed to do. So I'm really okay. This is your warm up. That's cool. Let's see what your encore. Back to you, Cap.
Well, I feel, you know, as far as a teaser, I have to agree with Dal. I think it did its job. A lot of times when we see these teasers, they're terrible. They're terrible. A lot of teasers are just terrible. And I think this was decent. This was a decent teaser. It definitely piqued your interest, and you want to see more, see what's going on. You know, teasers are just exactly that. They're not supposed to just come along and blow you away. If a teaser blows you away, and you look at the trailer, then you go, ah, that's it? You don't necessarily want the movie. Teaser's supposed to say, ah, that's what it tastes like? That's what it smells like? Okay, that's what a glimpse of it. I want to see more. And that's what it did here. Back over to you, Sir Affleck.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I think it's good that they didn't show any space shots. Because it is a teaser. We don't know what the hell is going on. You could have had it where they show you a minute clip, and you pretty much can figure out how this is going to roll. And I don't want to spend $10 on a movie knowing full well, seeing all the greatest, you know, all the punchlines, all the jokes. You know, they're so desperate to get people into the theaters that they have to show you practically the entire movie to bring you in there. And there's no surprises.
Good point.
The only thing I will say is I'm inclined, I could be wrong, but I'm inclined to think because of the voiceover had that larger-than-life, kind of godlike voiceover. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's Gary Mitchell.
You think it's Gary Mitchell?
Because
huh?
It gave the impression that it was a godlike being speaking. So I'm just thinking. And also, he was in a Star Trek uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm led to believe he's going to be Gary Mitchell. I'm led to believe he's going to be Gary. But I could be wrong. But the way that he's speaking, that whole... Because that was a thing. You know, that might be an homage to the original series. The original series, you know, with all the archaic technology, they had Gary Mitchell speaking in this godlike, booming voice. You know, you think of Daryl, you know this, and the captain knows this too. Now I'm going off on a tangent somewhat, but it's tangentially related. Candyman, you know, the Candyman horror
Tony
series.
Tony Todd.
Yes.
Yeah, Tony Todd, thank you. The thing, I remember seeing that in the theater. The voiceover was scary as heck. When the Candyman would speak, you would have like the heebie-jeebies in you. I remember what it was. It was scary. His voice. That was a little bit of that going on with this teaser trailer. So, again, to the audience, I could be wrong. I hope it's Gary Mitchell. I really do. That was always a great, you know. Oh, and someone's mentioning Charlie X. Yeah, Charlie X was another one. I forgot who the actor was who played Charlie X. Can't remember the guy's name. I know his face. But
well,
Charlie
can,
X was another. Huh?
Yeah, can we all agree that we don't want no mystical portal leading to 1930 Chicago? Well, you know, yeah. I'm going to take out of the Star Trek mythos, leave that behind, and yeah, no Greek, fake Greek gods either. We don't need that either, you know.
But, you know, sometimes I can't ride with you on that, Daryl.
Those episodes, that was good.
First of all, you just mentioning those episodes, they're so forever etched in my mind. I know exactly what you're talking about. That Tommy Gunn episode where the crew were gangsters, not gangstas for you hip hoppers, gangsters. I think a young Joan Collins was in that episode. Those are iconic episodes. And that episode where you had a diminutive actor, and at the first on-screen interracial kiss was in that episode you talked about with the gods, where they had phoenix-like powers, telekinesis. They had telekinetic powers. Those episodes are too iconic. They're too legendary. They're too easy. Everyone knows what you're talking about. You can't defecate on those episodes.
Well, I'm just saying that out of this one, you could safely say none of those two things are going to be in this Step Into Darkness. You know, we could easily say that right now. So you could cross those off the list. And, oh, no space worm either. You don't get a space worm from this trailer. So you could cross that episode off the list. That leaves you with what? 40 episodes left? Let the speculation begin.
All right. There's still we've got about less than 2 minutes remaining, gentlemen. There's a lot of topics that we have delineated, but we can't get to all of them, so we're going to pick one quickly. Just quickly. Shouting out Great Britain, shouting out again Stanley Kubrick. UK's Misfits, one of my favorite series. I think it's season four. I think they call it series four in the UK, but we call it season four here. Actually, with the original cast being gutted, now there's really an all new cast, more or less. It's not that bad. Actually, it's quite good. So that's my opinion. You figure there will be something lacking with all the original cast gone now. Now, what has become more interesting is that, from my understanding, the Misfits have been green-lighted for a movie, and that the original cast will return for that movie.
I have to see, because that's kind of hard, given what happened to the original cast. Not to let the fans know if you want to go out and take a look, but it's kind of hard for some of the members of the original cast to come back. But one thing Misfits proves, all right, all those people that say, you know what, a New Mutants movie after the X-Men, when the works, you need the big-time guns always in there. Oh, heroes needed to have the original cast in or place all the time? No. Misfit essentially cleared the docks of the characters you knew, brought in a new set of characters. And as long as, and this is Captain's line, as long as the writing and the photography and the camera angles are on point, as long as it's quality, you'll get into it. And sure enough, the new cast of Misfits, everything's on point. It feels like the old show, yet different. So it's a must-see. It's a recommended. If you are an X-Men fan, you have to see this. If you're a comic book fan, to see how they turn all the tropes on its ear, you got to see this. If you're a fan of good action-adventure/comedy, you got to see this. If you're an Angliophile, you got to see this. There's no excuse not to see this.
Yeah, you know, we've mentioned the Misfits quite a bit on the show, and, you know, for those who are just coming in for the first time, just briefly, as Daryl's talked about, it's a British television series, sci-fi, fantasy television series with a group of young people who are performing community service. They're kids, you know, people in their early 20s that are rough around the edges. They're not absolute criminals. They have kind hearts. They have quirky behaviors. The X-Men analogy is a correct one in the sense that these are kids rough around the edges, and comically, they have to do community service. While they're in the midst of doing community service, a storm occurs, that infamous tropey storm occurs, and a number of people in the London populace gain superpowers. But their powers are not even conventional superpowers. They're quirky superpowers, very quirky powers. Some are desirable powers. Some are not desirable powers. And then, you know, the hijinks begin. Over the last couple of seasons, some of our favorite characters have been killed off. So, again, if we see a film, from what I'm hearing, now that, you know, in season four, almost all those original cast, not almost, the original staff, the original cast are gone. But with the film, they're supposed to be returning. How that is going to happen, if there's going to be any kind of connection to the TV series, thematically, we don't know. But they, Daryl, they've played with time travel before. That time travel, one of the characters had time travel powers. So we, there's going to be a, there can be a convoluted way to bring the characters back, since the first two seasons are all about time travel.
Well, yeah,
they're all about
and
time travel. So I think that where there's a will, there's a way, and also there's going to be a
timeline. That's all.
Allegedly, where there's a will, there's a way. There's going to be a U.S. version of the Misfits as well, just like you have Being Human, one, another favorite U.K. series originally, that has been turned into a sci-fi series. It appears that Misfits is on route to also become a U.S. version as well. I'm not happy about it because we Americans seem to laugh these things up. I have yet to see the U.S. version of Being Human.
It's okay.
It's
not great.
I've yet to see it.
It's not.
I am spoiled. I am spoiled on what's the actress's name? I have a crush on actually. The actress that played who they got rid of her also.
Shoot. Anyway, yeah.
Black actress. She's a cutie. She's not on that show anymore. She was killed off. So I mean, you know, but.
Well,
I'm not a fan of the U.S. version
hard
being
to be
human,
killed
and
off,
I don't know. I might have something against the Misfits version as well, the U.S. version.
All right. And since you brought up sci-fi, reminder, tomorrow night, all sci-fi heads, sci-fi is doing their retrospective on the channel tomorrow, I think 9 o'clock-ish, with the, I think it's 10th or 20th anniversary. So they're going to take a look back online at their programming and some of their decisions. And you know what? I will rip apart it in my blog because, hey, I'm a hater. What else is there for me to do?
We're going to have to transition to the next show, next door. Daryl, it's been real. Captain, I still do not have access to anything.
Guys.
You know what? If you can go to Spock with a Beard, just simply input Spock, and then you're going to have to transition. You know, you're going to have to do some, you know, just go right into some intro, or just go into the Afro Nerd intro to make things simple. We're just going to have to just not have our custom movie film intro. Just go to Spock with a Beard, and then into Afro Nerd intro.
Yeah.
We got to do what we have to do.
It's not coming.
Live radio, guys. Live radio.
Just put Spock.
Yeah, I put it in. Nothing's coming up. They're freezing us out here.
You're frozen on your end.
Yep. Hold on. Yep, frozen.
Wow.
Oh, you guys are going to just have to roll through this thing straight.
Yeah.
Good luck to you guys.
All right.
Wow.
It is what it is.
Amazing.
All right.
Good luck, guys.
Good luck, Daryl. As always, man, we appreciate your support on this one. Thanks, man. Next week, we'll get into it again. We'll mix it up. So the board is – I know the board lags sometimes, Captain. Is it just lagging or is it frozen up completely?
It got stuck. Let's see what happens now. I went out, come back in. All right, let's see what we got here.
All right.
Spawn for the Beard?
I think not.
We'll be right back.
hear black people say that so-and-so set us two steps back. Now, just to see how far back black people are right now, we got a chart provided by the American Black Progress Association. Now, let's check out the chart. Now, you also hear black people say that we're almost there. Well, as of today, there is 3,653 steps away. Now, every time we've made strides, we've been upset by missteps. You know, in 1960, SNCC and CORE stayed sit-ins. It's a great time for black people, you know, putting us ahead four steps, one, two, three, four. But in 1988, the Crips and Bloods stayed shootout, putting black people six steps back and 6 feet under. Hey, now what happened? Roots comes on, gives black people a sense of pride, five steps forward. And Roots begins a trend of names, of African names, beginning with Kizzy and Kuta, and ending with Sucretia, Beyonce. 11 steps back. 11 steps back. Beyonce. Come on. What else happened? Mae Jameson, the first black woman to go out of space, blasts us 15 steps ahead. But then Little Kim, the first black woman with a kitty out, let us love it. 42
Different kind of intro this time. Let's get started.
Okay, I see that. You weren't able to get to the Afternerd intro, correct?
Nope.
All right. Folks, welcome to the second half of Afternerd, featuring Captain Kirk on Afternerd Radio. Again, we'd like to thank our stalwart colleague, Daryl B., from the last show. Now we're into the second half, the second hour. And this is Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk. We are expecting fan of the show, colleague and friend, Hilton Ariel Ruiz. He's back. We had him on a few months ago to discuss his book, 40 Deuce. And now he has a story to tell that is going to be incredible. Knock your socks off, Captain. The irony is in the house on this one. It's a lot. It's a lot to ingest. And I'm glad he survived it, but it's definitely something worthy of discussion, something that's just interesting. So he should be coming through momentarily. Again, Hilton Ruiz discussing his connection to The Walking Dead in a way. I don't want to give too much away. I'm going to leave that up to him. But, Captain, an incredible story. Definitely. And then, of course, we'll talk about a few other things. Actually, something that was not listed, Captain, that we're going to have to address because our friends were emailing back and forth about this thing. Beyonce versus Wendy Williams.
Okay. All right.
For
that should be interesting.
For the first time in my adult life, I'm going to be on Team Wendy Williams, although both are consummate Afro-Saxon toupee wearers or Caucasian hair hat wearers. Both are into that hobby. But I'm on Team Wendy on this one.
I love some of the comments, you know, that were going back and forth. It was rather interesting, to say the least. Sergio, I'm there with you.
Oh, yeah, the comments were tough, Captain.
Yes.
The comments
absolutely
were tough, but, you know, I don't want to tease the audience. I'm going to have one of my legendary musings on this thing after we speak to Mr. Ruiz, but it's going to be a heavy one. We're going to talk about that also in the Blue Area segment, Captain. We have another wealthy black woman in full effect. By way of Nigeria, you told me about this. You sent this to my attention, and she actually, by, I guess, $500,000, allegedly, she surpasses Oprah as the wealthiest black billionaires in the world, the wealthiest black billionaires. She's number one. Oprah's number two. But
$500,000,000.
I'm sorry. You said $500,000,000? Yeah, $500,000,000,
yeah.
Like $500 million, I think. Yeah,
it's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot. If it was $500,000, I was like, oh, okay, wait a minute, that's a little too, you know.
Yeah.
But $500,000,000, yeah, there's a little bit of a difference there. Yeah. So I believe she's an oil baroness. She started out as a fashion maven, and somehow she has some money from the oil industry. But she is over Oprah, believe it or not. And she's a woman of African descent by way of Nigeria, so that should be pretty interesting. And also, if we get a chance, we'll talk about Dr. John McWhorter, who was a guest on our show a few years ago. He's during the nascent period of Afro Radio. He actually came by and he had a book that was out at the time, and he was a great guest. Great guest. He is, I think, he would label himself. I mean, we actually discussed it when he was on the show. You can definitely go to the archives, folks, and check out. Just simply Google John McWhorter Afro Radio, and I believe he considers himself a progressive. But he works for the Manhattan Institute. He's a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, which is a conservative think tank. So he definitely has a conservative bent. But he came out and said that he, with a recent New York Daily News article, he's a columnist for Daily News, he came out saying that he felt that racism is waning, that racism is waning. So we will unpack that for your listening pleasure and edification. I don't have the board in front of me, Captain. So is Mr. Ruiz, is he in the background or what?
He's not up on the screens as of yet.
Okay, so.
He's not up on the screens as of yet.
He should be coming in momentarily. But, again, folks, definitely go to afronerd.com because not only do we have, you know, some things about this particular broadcast, but there are some links up to some of the stories that we're going to be discussing, especially Mr. Ruiz's story. So definitely go
right.
go to that. Is he in?
He's in right now. I'm going to bring him in.
Okay.
Mr. Ruiz.
Yes.
Mr.
What's going on, guys?
Mr. Ruiz. How's it going, sir? How's it going? All
right. I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me, guys.
As always.
Yeah.
Just for my edification, how do you pronounce your last name?
It's either, you know, in American way you say Ruiz, and Latin way, you know, you say Ruiz. So,
ah.
Either way, yeah.
See, Captain, I'm on top of things, brother. I'm on top of things.
That's all right.
Hilton
Ariel.
Ruiz.
Yes. If they say in an American way, they probably would say Hilton Ariel Ruiz. In Latin, it would be Hilton Ariel Ruiz.
Ah, yes. Listen, sir.
Yes.
You're a friend of the show anyway, so it's no big deal for you to come on. But this time around, we had to have you on, man, because of a personal story that you can talk about, and as only you can. You were on a few months ago to discuss your book, a great book. There's a link to the book, folks, 40 Deuce. Go to afronerd.com, pick up this book. But beyond that, talk about this incident involving The Walking Dead. There's a gentleman that was in your residence, and a tenant. And I'm going to let you go on this. Tell us what happened last week and just the ironic nature of it.
Well, it happens to be, I would say, something, you know, we all don't, you know, we don't really want this to happen. But I would have to say last week on Monday, I think it was the 3rd, if I recall, I would say around 2:30, between 3 o'clock in the morning, as I'm sleeping, there was a shooting that occurred in the residence of my home. It happens to be that police and detectives all ran up in my house. At that time, I really didn't know what was really going on. And unfortunately, somebody did get injured. There was a female that was actually shot by her boyfriend. The details started to come out later during the day, and it happens to be that, you know, it was such a surreal moment because of it, how it all happened and how it just, there was, you wouldn't believe how many police was here, and basically it was just, you know, out here in the island, you know, a lot of times it's police, you know, they chasing cats up trees, you know, so where I'm at located, it's just, this is something really big. So what happened was that, during the day, I heard that the whole story about the female getting shot over the Walking Dead television series. And I was like, what? You know, I thought it was a joke at first, because a friend of mine called me and told me about the story. And then I went online, and basically it happens to be true. There was an argument due to the fact of the Walking Dead series, basically where the gentleman had argued that the zombie situation in the television series can actually occur, where the girlfriend had disagreed, said it was ridiculous, and the whole shooting occurred due to the fact on that discussion. Now, the whole irony of the whole thing is that everyone knows that you two gentlemen know that I'm working on a series called Zombie with a Shotgun. So it was just kind of like the whole art. Say it again?
No, I'm just saying, when you're going through the story, continue. I don't want to interrupt your flow.
Yeah,
but...
no, so the whole thing is that me doing Zombie with a Shotgun was just so kind of ironic, and I was like, whoa. You know, at first I was like, it just was kind of like weird that the whole situation was, again, the irony and the whole thing about it. And it's just, the whole... just the whole connection of it, the gentleman gets, kills the girl and all through the whole zombie. So it happens to be that there was passionate people, there was people in the house that were living in there that was passionate about zombies. I wouldn't take it that far, but that was what happened.
Well, listen, we have to flesh this out a little bit because, to the listening audience, this is a first here at AfroNerd, and we're trying to pull this out. Even the media didn't cover this aspect of it. The media, they love ironic stories. So it's a little unsettling as far as just how adept are the media when it comes to pulling out certain stories. They have to understand, again, folks, Robert Kirkman is the writer of this comic book / TV series. I was a fan, it's called AfroNerd Radio for a reason. The last show before your appearance, Hilton, we discussed this stuff all the time. We've discussed Walking Dead ad infinitum. So we're fans of the series as well, fans of the comic book. As you said, zombie apocalypse. This gentleman that lived in your residence was, I would assume, a comic book or a horror fan. Mm-hmm. He took it to the next level, shot his girlfriend over a Walking Dead TV series, while you yourself are a filmmaker making a film about zombies. We've shown and we will continue to show the series on our blog. It's all over the internet. Zombie with a Shotgun. I think series 2, the second episode has just been released. Correct? You're probably on the third episode coming pretty soon. So the irony is, and this is why I don't understand how the media overlook this, is that you have a gentleman who shoots his girlfriend because he's rambunctious about this series, and while you yourself are a filmmaker who is depicting a zombie series with the main protagonist having a shotgun. So the whole thing is a cyclical, ironic story that I'm wondering why the news didn't pick up that element of it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think there was the main story, to tell you the truth, that I think the whole Walking Dead, when it came upon the story, they just tried to run with it. But, there was that story. And one of the other stories that they missed totally was there was a family. It was my family living there, and it happens to be, what if one of those bullets went through the wall or something and hit one of my members of the family? They didn't even capture that story. That would have been the real horror of this whole situation. Because basically the shooting actually happened right on the side where my bedroom is at. So easily one of those bullets could have gone through the wall. But, these guys, the media started, reporting the story basically in the wrong way of actually saying that there was a shootout right in front of the door in my house, right front door. And that was totally false. There was no shooting there. And they basically put a camera saying that there was bloodstains on the mat. And that was also totally false. There was no blood. There was no shooting in the front of the door of the house. There was no blood splattered. It all happened in the house. So that's another, I guess what you would call it, a mistake of journalism. Of, they didn't get the story right. And I'd also just show everybody that, sometimes, what you see on the media is not always accurate.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Like you said, they didn't really pull the full story out. They didn't really address, as you said, your family and what your ordeal was. Now, you were there at the time of the actual incident. Were you there to provide first aid to the young lady? I mean, how was she doing? She was definitely hurt.
My prayers go out to her and her family, but, you know, it happens to be that she is, you know, she's doing very well. She's home with her family and everything, what I hear. And, you know, it looks like she's going to be, you know, recovering very well. And, yeah, the incident actually happened so fast that the female was actually taken to the hospital by her boyfriend. So it happened.
Wait, he shot her and then took her to the hospital as well?
Yes, according to this story that they have out there, yes.
Sir, you're in a house full of a chock full of nuts. Respectfully, I can't imagine someone shooting me and then, my bad, let me take you to the hospital. That within itself is a little maddening. So, did you know that he was, you know, like if he was able, he should have been arrested from, you know, there should have been like a police involvement right away. He was able to shoot her and take her to the hospital. This wasn't an accidental shooting. I mean, what about that? Wasn't this somewhat premeditated?
You know,
you can't really speculate on that.
I can't really speculate on that. You know, there is the whole accident element. You know, the whole angle saying it's an accident. Was it? I don't know. Was it done intentionally? I can't really say. That one is there's only two people really know the truth on that one, you know. And
Captain,
basically, yeah.
I'm sorry, Captain. I think you have a question. Actually, I'm rebooting now, Captain. So as you sent me a message, go ahead. I'm still rebooting.
All right. Now there are 10 million stories in a naked city. That's New York City, and obviously this is one of those stories. Now that being said, how well did you know this individual? When I say this individual, I mean the male, the shooter. How well did you know him? What type of person do you think he is? Your interaction. Can you just talk about your interaction with this individual, the day-to-day with him, please?
You know, I would have to say, you know, I've known him, you know, pretty decently. I would see him almost every day or every other day. We both lived in the same, you know, house. You know, what I always say is that, you know, there's always good in everybody and there's always bad in everyone else, you know, and happens to be that something bad came out of this. And I can't really tell how his character was, you know, like if he was a bad person or he was a good, but, you know, to me, he was, you know, he seemed like he was a fine gentleman, and see nothing wrong, and I guess things happen, you know. Again, that night, the bad came out of him, and whatever story it was, accident or not, I guess you could leave that up to the courts now.
Well, you know what? Actually, Captain, do we have a... We have callers? I think, just one person just wants to hold on. I don't think
one person is holding. That's all.
Okay.
They don't seem like they want a question at all at this given time.
All right. You know, there was a question I wanted. Oh, yeah, but, you know, Hilton, with this gentleman, I mean, were you aware of his penchant for horror and for Walking Dead specifically? I mean, you're a horror fan as well. I mean, did you two connect on the horror tip?
You know, we actually never did connect on the horror tip, but, you know, he actually did see my Zombie with a Shotgun episode. So that was the only far as connection as in that, but as in knowing that he was very passionate about the whole Walking Dead, no, I did not know. I did not know that. I mean, everybody, I guess, loves zombies. I mean, the majority of people. The series is the number one show on air. On the cable. So that I did not know.
Well, you know what? Actually, I want to go to a news clip. Now that I'm on the boards, Captain, I think, you know, it took like half the show for me to get our boards up, or at least my side to get my boards correctly. Without further ado, I do want to give the audience the actual news clip with the police chief talking about this. And again, we're talking to Mr. Hilton A. Ruiz about this incident. You know, it's funny that the news clip comes up with the police chief holding Walking Dead in his hand. So, yeah, I think that is kind of weird within itself, even from Earl Kirkman's side. You may want to talk about this when we come back after we play this clip, Hilton, about the fact that they're definitely, I guess appropriately so, they're definitely distancing themselves away this, you know, with the message board. You mentioned something about this, that this was talked about on the message board, and then you can't talk about it now. You know, what's up with that?
Yeah.
You know, they're not really trying to bring any kind of connection between this tragedy and their show. All right, you know, let's hold on for a second. This is the police chief talking about this incident. Hold on, Hilton, one moment.
Early yesterday morning, Mr. Jared Gurman, 26 years old, was out with his girlfriend, and they got involved in a heated argument over a television show. The conversation was about a television show called The Walking Dead. He's passionate about it, and that's what started the argument, and then it just escalated to the point that it did. He didn't want her to go to the apartment, but she did anyway, and when she got there, she found him outside the door armed with a .22 caliber rifle. She was walking up the stairs to the apartment when Mr. Gurman raised the rifle, pointed it at her, and fired one round into her back, causing a very serious injury. She is being treated and is now in stable condition. He has told us that he pointed the weapon at her and that he fired the weapon.
Wow.
Woo!
Listen, Hilton, we're glad that you and your family are safe. We want you to continue making more projects for yourself and for us. And listen, I pray for all parties involved, but this man, you know, we always talk about this. This seems to be walking time bombs. And I don't understand how someone can transition from a great TV series, treating it as fantasy, enjoying it as fantasy, for it to be that serious to shoot at your loved one over a damn fantasy zombie. You know, he proved the zombies are real on this one. You know, I think he really did. He really did. Captain, you have one more question. I think we're going to have to go to a transition. But any other thoughts on this ordeal? Madness.
Now, there's a lot of talk with the NRA, with gun control and everything else, and we see these politicians running around talking about, you know, Obama hasn't done this or done that about gun control. Do you think, you know, in this incident here, you know, were these guns licensed? Were they not licensed? Did they mention anything about that? Were they being licensed, not licensed? Are they illegal guns? How did this man just have guns in the apartment like that?
Yeah, according to those guns actually were, you know, guns that you purchased straight out like a Walmart or, you know, one of those Kmart stores. You go in the back and you can actually, you know, give your driver's license and they do like a 3-day checkup to see if it's okay and then they'll sell it to you. So it was one of those, I guess the assault rifle he had purchased. I think there were three of them up there. So they were actually, at the moment, they were legal and they were used for hunting.
Okay.
You know, actually, Captain, we have a call. Let's entertain the caller. After the call, we're going to have to move along. Again, folks, we're talking to Mr. Hilton A. Ruiz. Pick up his book, 40 Deuce. Check out on our blog as well as simply Googling Zombie with a Shotgun. He's an excellent short film series, Zombie with a Shotgun. The irony is not left on us. But support his film, support his book. Definitely available for purchase. It's Christmas time, folks, so pick up, especially the 40 Deuce book. Pick it up. It makes an excellent stocking stuffer. Let's go to the caller and see what this person has to say. Caller, welcome to Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 585. What's up?
Hi, my name is Khan. I'm from upstate New York. You guys don't think that it, I don't think it was the gun that he bought. I think it's the actual show. Don't you think that show is a little violent? And if someone's, like, a fan of that show out of any other shows that are on, don't you think that they would tend to get a little violent? I mean, TV shows and entertainment and period get under your skin. If you're watching somebody get shot and killed on the regular, you know what I mean? And they kill, like, at least 5-10 people almost every episode. Don't you think that eventually will embed in his mind and formulate out into some sort of physical thing?
I want you to take that.
All right. Well, we talk about this all the time on this Afternoid show featuring Captain Kirk, that, you know, TV and music at times can be a form of mind control. But if the mind is steady, I repeat, if the mind is steady, you brush it off. You just see it as entertainment, not something to push you over the edge. But if the mind is already at the cusp, on the edge, these things definitely can push you over. So the question is, you know, what was the person's mental state? He also was drinking at the given time. So now we also know what alcohol does, from what I understand. He was drinking a little bit, from what I understand. So that's also a possibility. You know, so that's the reality of it. But
yep. Well, I'm one to that believes in seeds. If a certain seed is planted in somebody's mind, eventually it will grow. I tend to see people that are into that type of show, that show specifically, Walking Dead, that they tend to be a little bit more aggressive. All my friends that are telling me to watch that show, they're super aggressive these days. I mean, they tend to be more flamboyant with their aggressiveness. They're a little bit more cocky. It's like they almost want to shoot me. Or shoot people. And I can tell automatically that in today's society, people are definitely a little bit angrier. And I blame shows like that. I really, really blame
Listen, we're going to have to go do a quick transition, a quick musical break. I appreciate your view on this. The only thing I will say, sir, is that the zombie genre has been around for so long. Again, Hilton is definitely a horror buff. He's fully aware of George Romero. The zombies have been around at least since 1968, even before that, if you include mummy films. We've dealt with horror films since
I'm sorry to cut you off.
Now's the time for the nuts to come out. I mean, you know, I'm not so sure about that. I think there are other things that are a bit more when you take into effect that this is complete fantasy. I would agree with you more when it comes down to what's going on in hip hop, because that's played more for reality. It's played more for reality. But the undead walking around, you know, it is really meant to be a fantasy, a fantastical kind of thing. I'm more concerned with the video games and that kind of thing where it's really played up on reality. Zombie movies, specifically, that's complete horror fantasy.
Zombie movies have been like movies once a year or once every other year. We're talking about the Living Dead that's on once a week. I mean, people go see zombie movies, like I said, once a year or something, or every other year or something like that. But now it's every week you're watching somebody getting shot in these zombie things. And it's just, I think it's going into the psyche of people. And that incident that you guys brought up, I think, is only one of many that have been appearing ever since the show came out. I mean, people are literally losing their minds. People are biting each other more now. When they're fighting, they're literally biting each other. And I think it's going into people's psyche. That's my opinion on the whole thing.
Well, sir, you know, you might have a point. You know, we saw the Aurora shooting with Batman, but, you know, Batman's going to be blamed 1 month. The Walking Dead are going to be blamed the next month. What's next? But you have a point. Maybe you're on to something. We do talk about the conditioning process mentally. We do talk about it here. So time will tell. Listen, sir, we appreciate the support. Continue listening. We're going to go to a quick transition. Hilton, any projects you'd care to talk about as we go to the next segment? Anything that's coming up in the horizon? I know you have the Zombie with the Shotgun series. Anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
We're definitely the third episode is going to be coming out in a couple of weeks, and we also have a new short horror film is coming out. The title is called 666 1966. And that's also a short film that you're releasing next month as well.
All right, listen, you're always welcome to come through to promote this. We look forward to it. Stay safe. Have your family. May your family stay safe. Listen, we're glad to see you survive this ordeal. It's maddening. The irony does not fall on short ears, on deaf ears, excuse me. So you know, we will continue to promote Zombie with a Shotgun, folks. Go to Afner.com to check it out. And, of course, just simply Google it. Go to YouTube. It's all over the place. Zombie with a Shotgun series. And,
one more thing about the call to call last time. You know, unfortunately, you know, you would change the channel and everywhere you go is shooting, violence, and every, you know, the movies that we go out, the television shows that we watch, it all has it. Can't escape it. And that's
something
I think.
He makes a point, but what do you choose? You know, there's a buffet of violence on TV.
Yeah, you can't escape it. And
you can go
Law
and Order for that.
Unfortunately,
Sons of Anarchy. But unfortunately,
Americans are bred to be violent. It's just that's the way it is. And yes, it is. The more and more as years go by, there's going to be more shows that are more violent, and that's something that we can't escape.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think we're just going to have our third eyes open and just watch and pray and just try to keep your zombie repellent ready. Hilton, as always, man, we appreciate you coming through. And keep in touch for the next project, and we'll have you on and we'll talk about that.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on the show. I hope you guys can go and search for Zombie with a Shotgun and check out the continuing web series that we'll be having.
Sounds good. Okay. Again, folks, that was Hilton A. Ruiz, Zombie with a Shotgun. All right, Captain, listen, now that my boards are up.
Yes, sir.
I feel like a new man. I actually can play some music for our listening audience. Folks, we're at the midway point. We have a lot to talk about. We got to talk about Beyonce versus Wendy Williams. I'm on Team Wendy this time. This time only, I'm actually on Wendy Williams' team on this particular opinion. It is what it is, you know. So let's go to a musical break. When we get back, we're going to talk about this nonsense with Beyonce. This is a classic tune. Well, you know what? No, let's go somewhere else with this. I was going to play Funkadelic. Let's play Exile. This is Exile, In Love, In Love. We'll be back in a few moments. So screw, folks. Be right back.
Love.
Love. Let's say it again.
Love.
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 Let's say it again.
Love.
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 Let's say it again.
Beyonce's directing and starring in an HBO documentary about her life. Now, I heard one person in the crowd say, "What?" And it came from right over there. Somebody said, "What?" And I have to tell you that this documentary has our staff here at Wendy divided. Half the people are hating hard and saying, "Why is she doing a documentary? We know all that there is to know." I'm not one of those people. I am a Beyonce fan. And I have to tell you, I'm going to be watching this documentary, even if she doesn't introduce us to new stuff, even if she tells us that story about how her daddy used to have them run in high heels again. I'm watching. Because fortunately, one of the TVs in our kitchen has closed captioning, so I'll be able to understand what she says. She, you know, Beyonce can't talk. You all, Beyonce sounds like she's got a fifth grade education. She can't talk. Excuse me, I just said I'm a fan, but we have to call a spade a spade. I mean, honestly. And we really do have the closed captioning just for times like that.
All right, folks, again, that was at least the song that was playing, Exile in Love, Exile in Love. And that was Wendy Williams, an excerpt from her show that's causing some controversy, Captain, because she laid in on the beloved Beyonce. And this has been burning up on the internet. We've been getting emails on this thing. And I have a specific opinion. I want you to take over for a moment. I'll let you say your piece, and then I'll dig in. But I'm pretty sure the audience is aware of how I'm probably going to weigh in on this thing. I already said I'm on Team Wendy for this one instance.
Well, there's two schools of thought. There's one school of thought that says, well, she's a very successful person. She doesn't really need to know how to speak. You have that school of thought. All right? Then you have the other school of thought that says, look, you're in the public eye. You're also a black person in the public eye. You should try to achieve and be the best and be all you can be. If you can't speak, tighten it up, take some classes, polish yourself up, just sound better. You know, so it all depends. This is a 50-50 argument. Because, you know, both sides have a very strong argument on this. And I'm really not on either side as far as it's concerned. You know, I do like Beyonce, but I also recognize she's not the best speaker at the same time. You know, she does what she does. She's a performer. There you have it. Now, if she had a master's in communication, yes, she would be a better speaker. That doesn't necessarily mean she would be a successful singer. See? So you have both sides of the argument. You go to school in respect to everybody else so you can go work somewhere so you will make more money than the person who does not have the education. That's what education is actually for. She is a singer, though. So, obviously, she's done very well as far as singing is concerned, as far as the money that she makes. Some people would say she's really not that talented. That's a whole other argument. I'm not going to talk about that. But now, the other side, once again, will come back and say, listen, you're in the public eye. You want to look good at all times. You want to speak well. You want people, the little kids are watching you. The little kids that are not going to be singers, that have to go to school and everything else, that bought your CD, that downloaded your music, this is not a good representation. So we can go back and forth all day long. But she's not a good speaker. We know this already. All right? Not necessarily fifth grade, more or less eighth grade. It's about that level. But back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, she's been in a few movies here and there where she had to speak, though, right? I mean, she was in the Idris Elba film. I guess
it's
a sepia version of what was that film? The film that the original film. I know it's called Obsessed, but
yes.
It was based on Fatal Attraction. Basically, the sepia version of Fatal Attraction, and she played Idris Elba was this professional. His character was definitely a corporate professional, and she had to play a professional's wife. She seemed to be adequate for that film. But this is, I guess, more of a uncensored version via this documentary that Ms. Williams is talking about, where she's, you know, it's an unveiling of her true self. So she's not really speaking the best. And I guess my train of thought, I mean, it's not too much different than what you're saying, but my thinking is this. This is the new era, Captain. And the era of the quote-unquote dumb black must come to an end. You know, as time comes on, as time goes on, I'm going to be a lot more blunt in these monologues. There's no one. People, every other ethnicity, of course we stare dummies in every ethnicity, but as time goes on, with resources being limited, the expectations are higher. And you are expected, even in entertainment, Captain, because I am a very keen observer as to what's going on culturally. You are expected to be a multifaceted entertainer now. You just can't be a singer anymore. We're seeing no talents getting speaking gigs, MC gigs. We see the Kardashians. Kardashian relatives are hosting TV shows now where your speaking has to be of a certain quality. So the excuse of not being able to speak and being somewhat illiterate, it's not a good one. Not in this day and age. Beyonce is only 30 years old, 30, 31 years old. She's been in the limelight since she was in her late teens. You just can't get away with this anymore. Matter of fact, years ago when you saw the Smokey Robinsons and you saw the Diana Rosses, who came from the projects of Detroit, they were given elocution lessons. They were given grooming lessons. It was a requirement. Back then, the imagery of blackness was very paramount, Captain. Very important. That even if you were not formally educated, you were being presented to the public. I'm repeating myself because I want people to understand the emphasis here. You were being presented to the public. So you were the expectations were high. You were not taking any shorts anymore at this point. You were not. Now you can be somewhat sloppy and it's okay. Not the case 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. But now, you know, there's a reversal of fortune now. I don't think you're going to be able to get away with this anymore. People are pulling out your card. I guess what was more disturbing for me is that, and this is what I see, which can be considered endemic with some of us in the black community. When we call out on one of our own, in the case of Wendy Williams, she called out, spoke her truth, and said, hey, homegirl really can't speak too well. It is what it is. The audience recoiled and said, ooh, oh, you know, Beyonce is a national treasure. She's beloved. It's not about dumping on this young woman. Because you make millions of dollars doesn't excuse you from being able to speak, to enunciate. You're in the public eye now. Come on. The excuses are wearing thin. The Kardashians can speak on some level. They're getting hired for speaking gigs. You can't just be a singer anymore, Captain. You just can't. And as I said, the era of the dumb black, that has to come to an end. Minstrelsy is coming to an end. It just is. Everyone else is moving forward. It's time for the black man to rise up and to move forward and to speak. You have the leader of the free world who has excellent diction. We can no longer tolerate this kind of black person. Just can't. We're going to close up on this. We're going to go to the other segment. I go on and on about this. We had the great Larry Elder on our show during the early period of Afro Radio when, from the Honor Guard, Mr. Starks was a co-host. And we interviewed Mr. Elder for his book. His book was called Stupid Black Men. Stupid Black Men, which is definitely a parody of Michael Moore's Stupid White Men. He talked about how he could not do mainstream media because the book was entitled Stupid Black Men. Because what's really being said to us, if we're going to be tribal, Captain, what's really being said is that, well, oh, you know, we got to feel sorry for you black people. We're feeling sorry for you because we already feel, we already secretly feel that you are dim. But we don't want to dump on you by showcasing a book that puts that out there. They don't even respect you enough. They feel sorry for you. They feel sorry for you because they already believe you're dim. So you can't kick a person when they're down by calling a book stupid black men. But we can call white men stupid, though. We can say, we can have a book called Stupid White Men because we really don't think they're stupid. That is the tragedy, Captain. That is the tragedy. But we showcase black genius on this show every week. We talk about it very easily. So the concept of black genius and black diction and the history of black oratorical ability is not something that's unique. It's not unique. It used to be very commonplace. Unfortunately, we're coming off the era of the dumb black, and that has to stop. That's it. I'm off my soapbox, folks. Any other remarks, Captain, before we move along?
No, you did well. You did well. Nothing further to add.
Yeah, some folks may not like the fact that I use the term dumb black, but I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about a small segment. You know, I'm not writing tribalism in that way. You and I are not part of that schematic. So just letting people know, I'm not calling every black person, because I am black. I'm not talking about every black person, but there's a trope out there, folks. There's a meme out there. We have to get rid of that. We have to stop that. All right, Captain, time constraints notwithstanding, we got about 11 minutes remaining. Wow, the time flies. Let's talk about this woman who is number one as far as wealth, with the surpassing the great Oprah Winfrey. You brought this to my attention. When did you hear about this young woman?
What it was, I heard about it about a week ago. I was just happening glancing through the internet, and I saw this article. It said, richest black woman. So I'm figuring it's Oprah. You know, we all know about Oprah. So I glance at the article. I said, wait a minute, from Nigeria. I said, here we go, Nigeria again, because we have showcased a few people coming from Nigeria. So I said to myself, I said, here's a blue area segment. This is perfect. This has to go in blue area. Here's the richest, quote-unquote, black woman coming from Nigeria, blue area segment. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people don't necessarily know about this woman. We all know about Oprah. Let's talk about her. So that's how it came here, came into being on the AfroNerd radio show featuring Captain Kirk.
Yeah, for the blue area segment, folks, again, for the new listener, blue area is just a cute thing that we label a segment from Marvel comic book lore. Blue area is fantasy, an area on the moon where Marvel characters can breathe air. They can actually breathe oxygen on the moon, hence it's called the blue area. So on AfroNerd, where we can breathe fresh air, get away from some of the dysfunctionalism that we do talk about, we talk about the good, we talk about the genius, we talk about the progressive. So in this case, we're talking about, if I pronounce this woman's name correctly, Folorunsho Alakija, 61 years of age. Her net worth is approximately $3.2 billion, roughly $500 million more than Oprah's $2.7 billion. Okay, you know, listen, when you talk about billions, folks, it's all relative. We can't even fathom this kind of money. Anyway, she's number one as far as black billionaires, and number two is now Oprah. She is an oil tycoon, Nigerian oil tycoon, but she first came into prominence by way of the fashion industry, and now she is she's a fashion designer. And in 1993, she applied for a oil prospecting license. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that, Captain? 20 years ago in Nigeria, she applied for your oil prospecting license, and now she is worth almost $3 billion. I mean, beyond. She's worth more than $3 billion. You know, briefly, because I think, do we have a phone call also, Captain?
Yes, we do.
All right, I'm gonna go to the caller.
Yes,
but,
we do.
You know, finding oil in this day and age, I like the idea of a black woman taking advantage of natural resources in her own country. The meme normally would be foreigners, European countries coming in. Now we see that China has interest in Africa. Usually history dictates that other folk take advantage of African natural resources. In this instance, we have a black woman who had the foresight to do it herself, and on top of that, she has reaped in billions of dollars. So kudos to Ms. Alakaja, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Let's go to the phones, see what this person has to say. Let's open up the lines. Okay, caller, welcome to Afternoon Radio featuring Captain Kirk. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 305.
Hi, yes. My name is Courtney Omega. I'm an author, and I'm calling from Miami, Florida.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've been following your posts on MediaTakeout.com for a while now, and I always planned on calling in, so I'm very glad and pleased to be on today.
Thank you. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, okay, first of all, I came in on the tail, well, not the tail end, I've been listening to the top of the show, but I did want to comment on the Beyonce and Wendy Williams situation, but you all were really covering so many points that I was going to make myself that I figured I would go ahead and let you guys have it. But now going into this next segue, I feel like the two are very much related, and where black America, where our priorities are, and where our feelings of admiration go to. And in black America, they are awfully askewed. Something that I'm finding more and more out about, of course, as I am trying to push my second novel.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. I'm here.
Okay, no, I thought you were cut off. So you said you're writing a novel.
Well, yeah, this is my second one. I am a published author. My first one was Be Without You. The second one is entitled now called The Blank Next Door. It's a social commentary about the double standards of women, especially modern-day women. And with my experience being over 10 years in the industry, in the entertainment industry, and coming out of that industry, I'm talking about my experiences and my observations now on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, listen, as you know, I post on Media Takeout because, listen, well, Media Takeout has a huge audience. And personally, you know, I'm sure you're aware of this, a lot of what goes on in Media Takeout and what the commenters are talking about is highly disturbing, how they see things, how things get a pass. You know, Chris Brown gets applauded because he has two women. Women are disrespected as if black women specifically are disrespected on that blog routinely, and the commenters kind of just chime in as if this is just normal practice.
The black woman is not just black women, but the browner the woman is, it seems like the more or the less tolerant they have for her. The case in point being Fantasia versus Alicia Keys, both involved with married men, both having children from married men. But Alicia Keys gets the pass. Why? You know, these are things that Media Takeout, they apply Alicia and what she's doing, but Fantasia, or Fanny as they call her, is crazy. Same thing with Rihanna and Erykah Badu. Erykah Badu has been with a number of, I don't want to say a number, but she's been with a few of hip-hop, you know, greatest men in their creativity and their skill. Rihanna dead men on a consistent basis. However, Rihanna is the baddest in the game, and Erykah Badu is a crazy hood rat for actually being a mother to her children and having children. You know, this is where, like I said again, our priorities and our admiration is so askew. also one of which definitely I think one of the most overrated performers and celebrities in the history of Black America, Beyonce as well, which was mentioned in the previous post. So, yeah, I thought
today I'm glad you said that, and I know you. We only got about 2 minutes remaining. Please tune in on Wednesday and following Sunday. But this is, you know, listen. We do. We showcase different types of music. There's other things going on with Black folks. There's more talent out here. The talent is substandard, and unfortunately, media takeout is they're making money off of our own wretchedness, our non-talent. The whole ghetto-centric vibe, everything is about money being made. Money's being made off of our dysfunction, and it has to stop.
Being promoted. Absolutely, it does have to stop, and I do feel in what you were saying with Beyonce and with the inability to speak, this has got to come to an end. When you have people like 2 Chainz making music about loving them strippers, he has 2 daughters, and his wife is pregnant to get a third. I want to know, which does he want his daughter to grow up to be? The wife, the mistress, the girlfriend, or the baby mama? Because he claims he has all of them. When you have Drake having such lines and songs about how he only needs to bed a woman one time, and because he only wants to hit it one time, you have really got to look at this. When you have Rihanna on her post stop saying, you know, I miss this nigga, or, you know, I miss my nigga.
I saw that.
I saw you posted on that. Exactly. And you think, what in the world, how can a society, how can you go into this and really look at this and not find this laughable? I tell you, I'm an acting school dance teacher, and what is going on throughout that is starting base level. They are talking.
Well, caller, unfortunately, we got about seconds remaining, so we have to go close up the shop. Continue listening, because we're trying something different. Trust me, you'll stick around for the ride. Wednesday and Sundays, we're on 7 o'clock, starting at 6 on Sundays, actually. We talk about these issues. Times have got to change. As I said in the post, whites, and this is not to, because we have a variety of listeners, racist whites have been pleading for Black folks to just accept becoming, quote-unquote, niggers. Yeah. Now we have accepted that.
That's awesome. I love
we have accepted something they've been asking us to accept for years. So on that note, continue listening. We're going to close on out. Captain, any remaining thoughts before we move on along? Wednesday, we're coming back, folks.
Well, you said a mouthful right there. There's nothing more to add to that. Let's do it again this Wednesday.
All right, folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. Let's go on out with some Prince. This is Prince performing Poor Goo. Poor Goo. We'll see you on Wednesday. It's been real.
Poor Goo. Poor Goo. Poor Goo. You don't want.